as we listen back to a series of broadcasts that Carl Nelson and I did in 2018, when we became the first cyclists to ever navigate the entire length of the Rock River, from its humble beginnings up in the Horicon Marsh of Wisconsin, down to its grand, I guess you would say, ending down there in the Quad Cities where the Rock River meets the Mississippi River. We're going to give a listen to those groundbreaking episodes that Carl Nelson put together while I implored him to stop so that we could go to sleep at our campsites and rest up for the next day's bike ride. And we'll also get to talk to some of the people that we met along the way, kind of check in with them, including Greg Farnham, who is a member of the Rock River Trail Association. Sue Spencer and I sat in the basement of WNIJ on one July morning, and we sat and listened to these historic broadcasts before they go into the Museum of Podcast History, which, you know, pretty soon I'm sure there's going to be one. And we found, well, you take a listen. I think, like, when I'm hearing these back, I play them from time to time. I have them bookmarked on my computer, and I'm super impressed with how they sound, knowing how sort of they sound very professional. I mean, Carl did an amazing job, and with a crabby partner who was, I got tired at about 9 p.m. every night, and he stayed up and put those together.
That's what I wanted to ask about, was just the tech side of it, as tech nerd here. How did you guys do that? So,
well,
you both
recorded. Guys, thank you for asking that. Carl did it all. He carried a lot of electronic equipment with him, and we would find a bar at night, and he would sit up, and I would sit and talk to people and have beer and eat whatever they had, and he would have his setup. He had like portable stuff. He had like that board. Spencer's in front of a board with lights and knobs and, what are those things called? The sliders?
Faders.
Yeah. Faders.
Yeah. Sliders.
Carl had that on his bike.
Yeah.
He would set it up on a bar, and he'd be listening and stuff like that. And then sometimes, you know, we'd go back to the campsite and he'd still be doing it. And I'd be like, we got to go to bed. I'm tired. You know, it's 9:30 p.m. And still hear him doing it. Yeah. Like doing extras and stuff like that.
So you guys didn't have like a motorhome full of backup people, you know, with
No, you didn't.
Okay. I was imagining like without, you know, doing all the cooking and bringing you everything that you're used to, all the luxuries of everyday life. So, no.
We had none of that. It was just like Lewis and Clark. Are you familiar with them? They explorers. We were the first people to bike on the Rock River all the way down. We were literally on the Rock River, but you could see it most of the time. And and you know, we had to find where we were going to eat. We had to forage for restaurants.
Whoa.
Yeah, we had to like hunt. See, oh, that looks like a good pub, you know. But you know, it was risky. Sometimes we'd go there and it wasn't a good pub.
We had to
trust the natives, and we had guides along the way, you'll hear, or
nice.
Perhaps have already heard, based on when you're playing this.
How did you guys decide to do this anyway?
Yeah, what was the inspiration?
This is going to be the answer for almost everything you ask, but it was Carl's idea. Carl figured it out, and I think it had something to do with the radio station wanting to be in partnership with more community groups and local groups, and somehow he had this notion that to ride the bike, and when he suggested it to me, I was like, I don't think you can do it. That was very
funny.
Oh, wow.
It was a lot of bike riding in those days.
I was curious about that because you're obviously an avid cyclist and have experience doing Ragbri and all of these things, but I think for Carl, this was his first biggest ride. Yeah.
It definitely, and he became a much more avid cyclist after that. I mean, but this was the first one, and for the record, he had no trouble. I had more trouble than he did, so that was just my snobbiness. But so it was his idea to do it, and then we used the routes that the Rock River Trail Association already had as much as we could. We had to make a few changes along the way, mostly for the purpose of the show. Like, we wanted to get closer to Oregon so that we could talk to people in Oregon, because that was, we had to find little spots along the way that we could, you know, present to the radio audience.
And we'll talk more later on about that, about the trail maps on the website, mm-hmm. and about how they actually set up the whole trail.
Yeah, and they've got the trails. They're still on the website, and they go in both directions. We went north to south. I forget why we wanted to do that. Well, we wanted to start at the mouth of the river, the Horicon Marsh, which is the largest saltwater marsh in North America. I don't know.
Freshwater. Yeah.
Wow.
It's the largest freshwater marsh in North America, or at least in Wisconsin.
Like that.
I don't know.
And the start of the Rock River. How long did it take you guys? It was, because I know it's broken up into 5 days for the radio show. Was it actually five
days? It was 5 days. That was, we did it exactly, we did it one day earlier. So the Monday, the one that we presented Monday morning, we did on Sunday. We started Sunday, and then we ended Friday. I guess we ended Thursday night, and then Friday morning we played. And I remember there was a power outage. We were hunkered down at the Chili Pepper in Oregon because my wife Molly had driven us back from the Mississippi River, and that's where he was finishing it out. And there was a power failure. It was a crazy storm, but he got it done. I don't know. I left him there. I went home, went to bed. But then I turned on the radio the next morning, and there it was.
Wow.
That was amazing. I mean, that part of it is that, so he was sending those from bars, wherever, across
campsites,
wow,
where there's no power.
And those would go to Dan Klefstad, who was our morning host, who would then get it together and put it on the air.
Well, I don't know that end of it. I don't know.
He was foraging for Wi-Fi also.
That's
right.
I remember him basically, Carl was pretty much running. Not only was he making the show, but he was running the radio station from his iPad pretty much during that whole week.
I do remember that. And I think the app was maybe new then. This was 2018 or 2019?
2018.
Wow. Okay, so the app was kind of new, or something had changed. But the app, there was all kinds of trouble with the app. So we'd have to pull over, and he'd be like, I have to do work on the app.
Wow.
And he didn't mean he had to do work on the app. He was like fixing the app.
Wow.
And he would do that, and I'd be like, Carl, come on. And then he'd be like, he'd finish, and then he'd say, like, all right, I'm going to launch a drone. He had a drone with him, and then so he'd launch a drone, and it would take footage of us riding.
See what we do for you, listeners? Wow. Well, at least Carl did.
Please give generously.
Yeah. Wow.
What a journey. Well, should we listen to a little bit of this day one here?
Yeah.
When you guys got started. Speaking of Lewis and Clark, I love the the nice 1700s like explorer hat you're wearing in this picture.
Let me start the story by backing up a couple years. I first heard about the Rock River Trail Initiative when Dean Mathis, a very famous bike rider from the Quad City area, who is better known as Bareback because he doesn't have a seat on his bicycle, contacted me and asked me what I thought of this trail that people were putting together, and particularly if I had any thoughts on the Ogle County area. I looked at it and gave some suggestions about how to make it a little bit safer, particularly on Highway 2. And that was the last I heard about the Rock River Trail Initiative. That's the last I thought about it, too. That was several years ago. Until Carl Nelson. Well, you know Carl. Here he is.
Okay, so a couple months ago, WNIJ was in the planning stages of our spring membership campaign. And we were looking at potential partnerships throughout the region. And through that search, we ended up seeing on the internet the Rock River Trail and kind of the associated partners with that. And we thought, wow, this looks amazing. And it'd be great if we could find a way to partner with them. Unfortunately, we just kind of ran out of time in the planning process. And it stuck in our heads just how cool it would be to be involved with this trail, to go on a ride or a paddle or something on this Rock River Trail.
Which is how Carl and I found ourselves in a pickup truck in the middle of a thunderstorm one Sunday morning driving north toward Theresa, Wisconsin.
Say that again.
Theresa, Wisconsin? Theresa, Wisconsin. Yeah. We'll get to that in a second. I'll tell you what, I am anxious to start riding on the Rock River Trail.
Yeah.
So we're in Theresa, even in the rain. You know what? Many explorers had to do things in the rain. You couldn't, like, Lewis and Clark couldn't just go back to, like, Virginia just because it rained. Although I'm sure they wanted to. Theresa is adorable. And Carl and I are charmed
We've been given directions to, we're about to cross the Rock River again.
After driving 3.5 hours north? After driving 3.5 hours north, we met up with our welcoming committee.
Welcome to sunny Wisconsin.
We met Greg Farnham, coordinator of the Rock River Trail Initiative, and George Marsh, president of the village of Teresa?
The native pronunciation is Theresa.
Theresa, okay.
And I'm not sure it goes back to Solomon Juno's daughter, I think.
It's close. According to Wikipedia, Theresa was actually his mother. George gave us a thumbnail sketch on the life of Solomon Juno, which ended with a sobering warning about the kinds of things that can happen on the trail.
He didn't live real long after that, and he just kind of... He was doing some trading up in Fond du Lac with the Indians, or up in, and they found him along the trail dead. So, so just kind of interesting
we'll
story.
Fare better than
yeah. I hope so. Yeah. So we're kind of a quiet little rural village, and we enjoy it. So
that's beautiful. I mean, it's a little gray today, but you can kind of see how charming it is, and. And Greg was about to tell us about the river here.
We're standing in River's Edge Park in the village of Theresa, right on the east branch of the Rock River, which comes down from the Theresa Marsh, which is upstream about 5-6 miles. There are two other branches, the south and west, that come through Waupun. And then they all three branches converge in the Horicon Marsh to form the main stem of the Rock River, which then exits the marsh at Horicon, which will be a city that you go through.
Right.
We talked with Greg and George for a little bit, and then it was time for us to be on our way. We rode our bikes close to 20 miles before we decided it was time to stop for lunch, which we did in Horicon. Horicon is home to the Horicon Marsh. It's North America's largest freshwater cattail marsh. After that, we proceeded south.
Carl and I saw an amazing number of regal heron and sandhill cranes, egrets, and lots of other birds we couldn't quite identify. The farmland scenery was gorgeous, and whenever we'd go a bit without seeing the river, we would wonder if we had taken the wrong road. But then, there it would be, sweeping alongside us or cutting across our road like a demarcating hash mark. There were stretches where we never saw the river, but it always returned to us like a stalwart friend. After riding many hours in the rain and cold, we arrived in good spirits to Watertown, where we met wonderful people, some of whom waved to us from porches, and others who met and talked to us in bars and restaurants of Main Street. This is Josh. He's the bartender. Okay, ooh, get your audio ready.
Shake of the day?
Shake of the day.
We asked Joshua, the bartender, about the dice game we saw people playing in bars all over Wisconsin. Watertown Alderman Augie Teets shows us how it's done.
Shake it. What's it cost me? A whole whopping dollar bill. You have to get 4 of a kind out of 7 dice or better. So 4 of a kind, shake. One dice or one shake for this guy.
Alright.
So shake of the day varies everywhere you go. And he was close. He got 3 sixes. If you would have got 4, you would have got a free drink. 5 would have gotten $20.
Really?
6, half the pot. I don't know what the pot is.
This is the second bar we've been in, the second time I've seen people doing this. So I asked you what was going on with the dice, and your answer was...
See if you can say it again.
Shaking it?
Your answer was, you're not from Wisconsin.
You're not from Wisconsin, right?
Right. And how did
I like to ask where people are from, because I like to get around, too.
Right.
You know, so...
In Illinois, we don't do dice.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's
it is a Wisconsin... It's just called bar dice, simply. So the shakes of the day, there's different types, variations.
Yeah.
You go to the dive bars, you'll get the, you know, the drunk roadhouse guy.
Yeah, let's hear what that sounds
like. Yeah. Trying to slam it as loud as you can. And they probably do that, they probably go, yeah, too, when they do it.
Because but, that's going to be a better roll if you do that, right?
Yeah, yeah, because your eyes are clearly better. Because who knows, you know, the harder you slam the dice. Yeah.
It was a long day, it was a great day, but we have an even longer day tomorrow.
Go to sleep, Carl. This day's over.
From a hotel room in Watertown, Wisconsin, I'm Carl Nelson.
Good night.
So how did you guys feel after that first day? Was it positive, looking forward to the rest, or was it like, what have we gotten ourselves into?
It was a little of both because it had rained all day, and it was, you know, sort of, it was a Sunday, so all the bars and restaurants and stuff were not that well populated, and the towns were small. But but it was beautiful. It really was. I remember just sort of one moment where Carl and I saw these cows licking salt lick, and we're like, oh, that's, we got to get a picture of that. So we like, you know, unpacked our bikes. We, you know, we had all these bags and stuff like that. We didn't unpack it, but we had to like get off the bike and then lean them against each other so they didn't tip over. And then we walked out over to the fence to get the picture, but it was just a piece of styrofoam.
Oh, how sad.
Yeah, it wasn't even a salt lick. And the cows weren't even, they were standing by it, but they weren't licking it.
Were they even cows?
Who knows?
I'm glad
it could have been the spirits of the prairie.
All I can say is shake of the day.
Shake of the day. That sums up the first day. Fortunately, things got better fast the next day.
All right, so it's day two. We're just stepping outside of the hotel in Watertown. We need coffee and food really
very badly. Yeah, the hunger level is incredible, much worse than it was last night.
Real quick, what is your preference when you're doing these long rides, Dan? Hotel or camping? What's your preference?
Camping, for sure.
You're a tent guy?
Yeah, I think it's much better. I don't know. It's you're going to sleep okay because you're tired, and I don't know. It's just hotels are. And especially in the summer, there's that moisture from the air conditioning. That's like most of them don't have windows that can open up. I don't like hotels.
Have you checked the forecast for today?
I haven't because we're going to be riding no matter what. But I do think I think it's going to be warmer and cloudy. I think it's going to be basically like this, except it's going to get hotter. And it's about, feels like maybe 65.
Yeah.
Little bit of a breeze. I mean, just gorgeous compared to yesterday. I'm very excited about today.
Yes.
Especially when we ride with the young scholar. But we'll talk about that later, I guess.
Woo! Teasers. We hopped up a couple blocks to the local cafe and grabbed as much caffeine and as much carbohydrates as our bloodstreams could tolerate.
And there we met Chris Fink, who would be joining us for the day. Chris Fink is a professor of literature and Wisconsin awesomeness at Beloit College.
Chris jumped right in, giving us a little bit of history.
So there's a nice mural here of our Wisconsin's dairy heritage, including a picture of William Hoard, who at one time was dubbed Wisconsin's most famous citizen. He was a governor of Wisconsin in the 1880s, and it was his idea to turn Wisconsin into a dairy state. He advocated for dairy and clean food, and he invited a bunch of Germans over to start dairy farms. And he started the famous Hoard's Dairyman Farm and Magazine, which dairy farmers still read today. And we'll pass by that in Fort Atkinson.
So we started pedaling. It only took 25 miles for Dan and Chris to start arguing.
Dude, a pelican is a cormorant.
Pelicans and cormorants are different birds.
No. Anything with a beak that scoops is a cormorant. Get your other beer. Make a good choice this time.
For the record, Dan was wrong. But that didn't stop him from being argumentative.
Actually, I'm not argumentative. I was making really good points.
You are argumentative.
No, I'm not.
Well, in any case, Chris was informative.
So Increase Lapham was Wisconsin's first naturalist. And one of the things he did was chart all the mounds in Wisconsin. But another of the things he did was pay special attention to the flora. And he sent reports back to Asa Gray, who was a professor at Harvard, I believe, to sort of chart the first natural history of Wisconsin. And Lorene Nitaker, the poet we're about to see, wrote a poem about this, and it goes like this. Asa Gray said to Increase Lapham, "Pay special attention to my friends, the grasses."
Could you make more noise while he does that again, please? Thanks.
Chris Fink showed us around Black Hawk Island, which actually isn't really an island. It's an isthmus between the Rock River and Mud Lake.
So we're pedaling into Black Hawk Island, which is the home of one of America's most important poets, Lorene Nitaker. And this place is really a special place. It's a place set apart. A lot of people from Fort Atkinson don't even come here. Set apart in part because of the river, which floods this area every so often. In 2008, the whole place was underwater. And as you can see, as we're passing through here, the structures aren't very permanent.
They tend to be flooded. Residents try to raise their houses up, but they can never raise them high enough because the next flood is always just a little bit higher.
Check this place out here.
This is the cabin where Loreen Nedeker lived for most of her adult life and wrote some of her most important poetry. Her father, Henry Nedeker, built it for her after she returned from Beloit College. And you can see the windows there. In 2008, the house, the cabin there was flooded up to the windows.
Wow.
So she lived there with no plumbing for most of her life, but she writes about getting plumbing and what a big improvement that was in her life. But much of her poetry is about living and surviving in this lowland area that you can see was easily flooded all of the time. Even now, when the river is just above normal stage, the water is basically at her doorstep.
Then we stopped by Island Bar and Grill, which at one point was owned by Loreen Nedeker's father.
A long time ago.
Island Bar and Grill is right on the shores of Lake Koshkonong. We ended up getting into a conversation with the proprietor of Island Bar and Grill, who coincidentally had been involved in the formation of the Rock River Trail. He explained to us a little bit about Lake Koshkonong.
The Rock River flows through Lake Koshkonong, so Lake Koshkonong, 10,500 acres, so big, big lake, but only 6 feet deep. So it's real shallow, big lake, a lot of marsh around the surrounding shorelines. The Rock River going into it, like out here, the river's 15 feet deep, so we got deep water here going into a lake that's real shallow. Flooding stuff, you know, it's a big watershed, so there's some flood issues, there's some flooding issues down on this road in particular. So springtime we can flood out down here. Then it kind of calms down this time of year now, and we're usually good for the summer. The Lake Koshkonong, because it's such a large watershed, Lake Koshkonong will have a longer duration floods. So as we take water in, we can't get rid of it. There's a bottleneck through Indian Ford and going down to Beloit, so we can't get rid of the water quick enough. So we'll flood, and when we do flood, it'll be 2-3 weeks before the water goes back down, just because of the topography of the land south of the lake. It was high up. It's still somewhat high, but it was high 3 weeks ago. It was very high. Half of our parking lot here was gone because the water was high enough. It was taking over half the parking lot.
Carl sent his drone up so we could see Lake Koshkonong from 500 feet up, and it was a gorgeous view. We wanted to stay even longer, except we had now been at Fort Atkinson for 5 hours, thanks to Chris Fink. So we got on the bikes and we headed south towards Beloit.
It was an arduous journey. We took a couple of wrong turns, and we may or may not have had to hop over a barbed wire fence.
We did.
Anyway, we made it finally to Chris Fink's house in Beloit. And you know, I don't think anybody knows how Beloit got its name.
Actually, people do know how Beloit got its name. I know how Beloit got its name, and it's a fascinating story, but you're going to have to wait till tomorrow for me to tell you.
We ended the night sitting around the campfire at the Fink house.
Well, we're listening to the frogs down in the Rock River Valley, and the poet we visited today, Loreen Nedeker, has got a great poem about spring peepers, and it goes like this. Get a load of April's fabulous frog rattle. Lowland freight cars in the night.
See you tomorrow. Good night, Carl.
Night, Dan.
You guys really nailed the cliffhangers, too, with these, the wait till tomorrow.
Well, one of the things that I remembered is that when we were talking about the you know, Beloit does have, there's an actual, which we talk about in the next episode, but there's also sort of like a mean-spirited joke about it, and which is well-known, which I'd be happy to tell you. But when we left that cliffhanger, Stacey Hostie got a letter from a listener who was irate and said that we had better not tell the story that she thought we were going to tell. But then she thought, because Professor Fink was on board, maybe we wouldn't do that, which is a weird thing. He's a weird person to put your faith into. Go ahead, you can leave that in there. But
what's the story?
Well, the story is, how did Beloit get its name? I don't know it exactly. Chris would know it word for word, of course. The punchline is that it's the noise that you make when you fart in a bathtub, which could be a Loreen Nedeker poem.
Except she didn't have plumbing. So it must have been one of her later poems.
Yeah, you're right about that. Maybe in a pond.
Yes.
Beloit. It's actually, you know, once you hear that, it's like, that is a...
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty accurate.
Detroit. But we went to an academic source and we came up with the real answer, which I think I botched. I sort of remember when I heard this back thinking like I didn't say it exactly right. I didn't read it clearly, but I'll let you guys be the judge.
Well, I really want to keep that in, but I don't want Stacy to get irate letters. I do love that story.
I don't know if that person's an Under Rocks fan.
It's not a podcast. It's a podcast. Yeah, we can say worse.
It's not offensive.
We'll put the R
everybody. On
it. Only to Beloiters or Beloit.
Yeah.
Teens.
One random question I just thought of, because you guys were talking about eating and loading up as many carbohydrates into your bloodstream as you can. What do you eat when you're on these long rides?
Everything and anything. Gotcha. You know, I don't know if you know about beer, but it is basically liquid carbohydrates.
That's right.
So you got to stay dehydrated a little bit by drinking the beer. But no, you eat a lot of, you eat hamburgers and you eat all the stuff you think you wouldn't eat on a
yeah,
healthy ride.
Yeah, so bar food.
You just need to fill up. Yeah, it's bar food, exactly right.
But you're getting so much exercise by the end of the day, you probably don't even feel that bad.
Yeah, cheese curds. You get, you know, you like to feel that bloat.
You better load up on those cheese curds before you cross the state line.
Exactly. Because they were not plentiful here.
Okay.
Hey, good morning, Carl. We are riding with a big crew of people. Everybody say hi.
Hi. Iris.
We've got yesterday's expert, Chris Fink. Not yesterday in the pejorative sense of the word, but the expert and his family. And we have with us Dominic. Say hi, Dominic.
Hi, everybody. We're heading south on Dugan Road toward Beloit. There's Big Hill Park, the crown jewel of Beloit, rising majestically ahead of us.
Right now, we're going to have breakfast. Carl and I are going to be putting carbs into our faces.
After breakfast, we headed south into neighboring Illinois, our second state on the Rock River Trail.
Whoa. What? We're forgetting something.
What?
We were supposed to talk about how Beloit got its name.
Oh, right. Right. Well, according to the book Place Names of Illinois by NIU professor Edward Kalari, South Beloit and Beloit were made up words. They were named by committees who were trying to come up with an interesting name. And according to the book, quote, one of the people there said, while proposing this, Mr. Johnson undertook to sound a French word for handsome ground. And in trying, he spoke Beloit. And I said after him, Beloit, like Detroit, in sound and pretty and original, I think. All sounded it and liked it, and it was unanimously adopted. So Beloit was a made-up word chosen to sound as pretty as the word Detroit. And I think they succeeded.
That's fascinating.
I think so.
We had to hightail it down south to Rockford because we had a hot date with His Eminence, the mayor, Tom McNamara, right on the Rock River.
What has the Rock River meant for the development of Rockford itself? Obviously, Rockford is named for the river. It must have been a big part of the development of the city.
Yeah, so I think, you know, historically you look at it as if it was once...
I just want to say the mayor just saved me. He just pushed
saved
me.
His life.
Yeah, thank you.
Just so you know.
About to get hit by a bike.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is to see how the uses of that Rock River has continued to support our community, mm-hmm. but just in a lot of different ways. It supports our tourism industry. It supports our local residents and local businesses, but all in different ways now than what it did before. Before, it was more kind of utilitarian in its sense of assisting our community. Now it's more for pure enjoyment and recreation. You see businesses like the Prairie Street Brew House popping
just
up.
Just had a couple of drinks there right
now. Awesome. Before. Thanks for inviting me to that. I get to stand out here in the hot. We also just transformed the Rails to Trails Bridge. So if you go down near Morgan Street, closer to the dam, used to have a railroad cutting across it, again, supporting our local industry. Now that we don't have that rail line, we've turned that into a Rails to Trails Bridge.
Personally, to you, growing up in Rockford, I assume you did grow up in Rockford. We didn't look at your Wikipedia page.
Do I have
one? You must. Tell us about the Rock River, like personally, not as the mayor of Rockford, but as Tom McNamara.
So quite honestly, I lived probably 10, 12 blocks away. My folks never owned a boat. I had been on it numerous times, but probably the thing that brings me closest to the river is this very path. There's a loop that you can do that's about 3 miles. My folks would just let us go do it as kids. And so no adults, it would be me and my sister or me and my buddies just doing this loop. So that was really the connection I had. A lot of people use the river to kind of divide the city. You have the east side and you have the west side.
Interesting.
And I think for so long that river's kind of been this divider, and I guess I'll go back to the earlier point I made about kind of bringing folks together. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting just watching how now people of both sides of the river are coming together
You mentioned bicycling, and we're also talking quite a bit about bicycling today, too.
Let's talk about your bicycling habits.
We have like 6 bikes, but the question
is... Are they all line bikes?
Yeah.
I love the line bike, by the way. It's terrific.
Last Thursday, I looked, 13,000 plus rides.
Since they started?
Yeah.
So let's talk about this a little bit. It was maybe a month ago, 6 weeks ago or something?
Yeah, probably 5-6 weeks.
They put Lime bikes everywhere, just sort of like seeds, you know, just planted them all over the place. And then people can come with an app, and I think it's $1 a half hour maybe? Is that right?
It's $1 a half hour, yep. Something and your first ride's free. All walks of life are using it. Some are using it for their mode of transportation to their job or to their school. Others are just using it for recreation. They don't own a bike, didn't want to invest in the bike. They just want to take a couple of rides. But we have been provided access to the imagery, the data that shows us how many riders do we have. We have how many miles they've ridden. We also know the routes that they're taking. And so that's really helpful from us on a city standpoint.
Right.
We have literally hundreds of people and now 13,000 riders showing us where they want to ride bikes. So with limited finances for a local municipality, now I know where to put bike lanes. Now I know where to stripe differently. So it's a lot of information and knowledge that now we will have at our fingertips so that when we create the next plans, they're data driven.
And when you're looking at that data, there's about 12 rides between the Oasis and Carlisle, back and forth. That's me.
And they seem to be kind of...
There's weaving,
yeah,
yes.
You're a lot of weaving.
Not the first one, but the second and third.
It always seems like the way home.
You're welcome to that data.
After talking with the mayor, we made for the hilly terrain that separated us from our destination, Dan's house in Oregon.
I like that. Hilly terrain. Good.
Today, we rode from Beloit to Oregon, Illinois, and we rode with my good friend Dom Cozy, who is an Oregon resident as well, and he's an avid cyclist and rides around the Rock River.
Hi. I had a lot of fun on the ride today. It was nice and overcast and, you know, just the right amount of wind, and so it was a fun day. It was fun seeing the landscape change and going through McChesney Park and Rockford and south from there through... Byron and then Oregon. It was good. Passed through a lot of towns. Had a lot of laughs.
Do you ride along the Rock River regularly?
I ride around Oregon quite often, and no matter what direction, you're going to be influenced at least by the valley, if not the river itself.
Hey, Carl.
Yeah, what's up?
That's enough. We got to go to sleep now. We got a big day ahead of us. We're going to see the Eagle's Nest in the Oregon Library tomorrow. Oh, yeah. We're going to actually get on the Rock River for a little bit.
Yeah.
We need our sleep.
I am exhausted.
Say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Is that weird at 6:50 and 8:50 in the morning? But still, we're just tired. Good night.
Good night.
I love that you guys got to talk with the mayor. Yeah. Is he a cyclist?
I think he rides around. Yeah, yeah. I definitely think he does. Yeah, he was talking about the bike, that loop. Do you know the loop he's talking about? It goes up from it's on the bike trail on the east side of the river, and then it kind of goes into that kind of cool neighborhood with the houses, and it goes down towards the Whitman Bridge and then loops around. I think it's about 3 miles.
Oh, like Brown Hills, like the big house. Oh, yeah. That's like one of the only hilly places in Rockford.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So as I'm queuing up day 4 here, the picture is you fixing a flat outside of Prophetstown.
Right.
Dan, do you remember this?
I do remember that. Yeah, that was at the end of the day. I got a flat tire. And Carl and I had a creative disagreement about how to present that flat tire. He wanted it to be a cliffhanger, which maybe you shouldn't include this, but yeah, I mean, we used it as a cliffhanger. But then I said on social media that I had a picture of me fixing it, and he didn't like that. So I took it off, but it was already ruined. I had already ruined it.
You spoiled the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But as a responsible bicyclist, what do you carry along for just in that? Mm-hmm. Do you have like extra tires?
That's
what
a good question. No, extra tubes.
Okay, good.
You could carry extra tires. They're not that big, but the extra tube should do it. I carry one extra tube, a patch kit, and I first try to repair the puncture if I can find it.
Yeah.
I also have a frame pump.
Mm-hmm.
So and they have these little air cartridges you can put on the thing, so that'll inflate your tire. So there's 2 ways to inflate the tire, 2 ways to fix the tire, plus you have an extra. You always have a lot of backups. And the other thing, young people, keep this in mind, when you get a flat tire, when you get a puncture, you have to identify the source of the puncture. You can't just fix it. You have to find like the whatever it is, the staple or whatever that you've run over.
Oh, yeah.
You got to find it in the treads of your tire. Otherwise, you will get in another flat tire. So,
do you spit on the tire to find the leaks?
I've seen people do that. I've not really had to do that. It's not my thing. But
dip it in the Rock River.
You could dip it in any piece of any bit of water. I use, because I have the frame pump, I just keep inflating it, and then you can usually hear it, or you can run your finger over the tube till you find the little air jet.
The more you know.
The spitting will work, yeah. But it's too bubbly, I think.
Maybe that's your spit.
It's gross.
Drink more.
So day four is from Oregon to Prophetstown, and this is your neck of the woods, Dan. So did this part of the ride feel like more comfortable to you?
It did, actually, yeah. Especially the route from we spent the night at my house, as you'll hear, and then we biked all the way to the Hennepin Canal. So through Dixon, I'm real familiar with those roads, and also we got to talk to people in Oregon, whom I ride with frequently, occasionally. And I don't know, Spencer, you're going to recognize, I don't want to spoil the surprise, but you're going to recognize somebody who has appeared on another recent edition of Under Rocks.
Who could it
actually
be?
You know what? Wait, Spencer, there's two people who have appeared on other editions of Under Rock.
In this segment alone?
In this segment alone, there are two former guests.
All right, so morning, Dan.
Good morning, Carl.
We just left the Libman Dash McNett residence.
We like to think of it as a ranch. We're about to turn on Highway 2, and we're looking at the vapors. They are pointing towards Prophetstown, which is a good omen because that means the wind is going to help us.
All right, it's going to be a little dangerous here on Highway 2, so we got to be single file. Hold your line, Carl. Hold your line.
The night before, Carl and I were given a tour of the Eagle's Nest Art Gallery from Andy Bettman, who is the director of the Oregon Public Library.
Yeah, so the gallery's been here since 1918. This is a 100-year anniversary. The Eagle's Nest Art Colony was just a group of writers and artists and painters and sculptors that would come to what is now the Red Oak Taft campus. And they would just be here, escape the heat from Chicago in the summers and be here for 4 or 5 months a year. And they'd paint and they'd write and they'd put on plays in town. And Laredo Taft was kind of the head of it. And they rented a big chunk of land, Wallace Heckman owned the farm that's up there, or that was up there. He rented it to them for a year, $1 a year. And they built cabins and they just had their own little utopian city out there in the summer times. Everything that's in the gallery here was donated by people in the art colony.
Okay.
So you'll see the artist's name on each of the paintings. In 1918, everybody donated one piece of art. So all this art's been up here since 1918.
So we made our way to downtown Oregon via Highway 2, and we met up with Terry Schuster. And we talked with Terry about some of the bicycling initiatives in Oregon, Ogle County, specifically Bike Ogle.
Yeah, Bike Ogle, that was something that was entirely a grassroots. People keep on asking, well, how do we join Bike Ogle, or who's in charge of Bike Ogle, or who do we call to find more about Bike Ogle? And there is nothing. It is totally a ghost organization in the sense that it exists on its own without any real body to it. It's just people in town who enjoy bicycling, and we want to introduce our town and our whole county to other cyclists that enjoy this kind of scenery. So we put together brochures, we put together maps. Someone at our county office created the symbol for Bike Ogle, and you'll see that up here a little bit further. Some people started doing bicycle sculptures downtown and decorating our planters, and it just kind of steamrolled from there. Before you knew it, the whole town was kind of all over Bike Ogle and adopted it as its own. Turn left here.
We're turning left here?
Yes, left here.
And so we should also mention, too, that people can go on to WNIJ.org and find the original shows here, and also check out some of Carl's really cool drone footage he got like of the Chief Blackhawk statue here.
Oh, yeah,
here.
That was a great one.
And I definitely recommend people read your posts that go along with each segment because they're really fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah, it is a full experience too because it's not like this is just a transcript of what you're hearing.
Right,
you
there's
need
some
them
extra
both.
Bits here. Like yeah. the guy at the restaurant bumping into you guys and recognizing you from the radio. He says, "Are you guys on the radio?" And Dan, you write, "For that brief moment, I understood what it felt like to be Dan Klefstad." I love that.
Yeah.
My other favorite part is how you end every post with "Dan Libman sent from my iPad." Because it probably was.
I still write that way, even when I'm just at home.
In your book.
Yeah, in my books. That drone footage of Blackhawk that he took, they actually used on the Oregon. And also the drone footage from White Castle.
White Sands?
White Sands. White Rock. Rock? Castle? Rock.
Castle.
Okay. Oh, that's, yeah, yeah.
It's called Castle Rock. So we had all the words. We just tried all the permutations to one fit. But in any event, that drone footage they were using on the official Oregon tourism site for a long time.
Wow.
I think they had credited Carl before it anyway, but they just used his drone footage. It's that good. So it's worth looking at.
Yeah.
All right. Should we get into the last day here?
Is this the last day already? Oh, yeah.
Day five, the mighty Mississippi. There's still a minute left of this. Here,
flat tires to come. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. Don't skip over that.
Can't miss that.
After days riding bikes alongside the Rock River, Carl and I had been wondering what it would be like to float on top of it. Fortunately, we knew about the White Pelican canoe and kayak rental business that Aaron and Christy Seitz had behind Conover Square in Oregon.
Dan started Aaron off with a tough question.
What's the difference between a canoe and a kayak? Some people think there is a difference, but there isn't, right? It's the same thing?
You can think of a canoe like driving a semi-truck.
Okay.
You could pack a ton of stuff in it, camping gear, coolers. Two or three people.
Yeah.
In contrast, you can think of a kayak like a motorcycle. Super agile, you can go wherever you want, turn on a dime, but you can't bring as much stuff.
Okay.
Let's get on the water.
All right.
All right, how do we describe what happened next?
Well, it was windy.
It was windy. There was a front end loader thing making a ton of noise.
You were sitting in the front of the canoe with a microphone, and I was paddling, and Aaron was holding onto the canoe so that we didn't go over the dam.
We were like 3 feet out from the shore at most.
At most, and then he pulled us back in. And I'm glad he did because it was very dangerous. We got a sense of what it was like to be on the river, and it was wonderful. And then we got a sense of what it was like to be safe again.
I mean, we had a bunch of like electronic equipment and
We spent the day trying to think about how to pretend like we did it and fake it, but we're just telling you the truth. We went out for a foot and came back in, and the man who put us out there never left his hand off the kayak canoe. And even though the mayor of Oregon, Ken Williams, had watched this debacle, he still agreed to talk to us.
You know, we're a tourism community. We've got four state parks within 7 miles, so we get close to 800,000 people a year.
Coming in the summer mostly, I would bet. Yeah, Aaron was just telling us about the tug of war across the way.
That's right. That's scheduled for Saturday.
Are you going to be on one of the teams?
I am one of the judges.
Hey, Carl.
Hey, Dan.
We are now in Dixon, Illinois. Woo! You can see the Rock River pretty wide at this point to our right.
It's gorgeous.
Tell them where we had lunch.
Porky's.
Porky's, where the guy who was running the kitchen knew what we were doing, recognized us from the radio.
He did.
And I would like to say also, interesting fact about the Rock River here, a lot of people know President Reagan. Are you familiar with his work?
I used to call him Ronald McDonald because I was very young.
It's adorable, because you were what, 22, 23? Anyway, a lot of people know, of course, that President Reagan was from Dixon, Illinois originally. And a lot of people know that he was a lifeguard, but I think what a lot of people don't know, in the Trumpian sense, in that I just learned it myself, is that he was a lifeguard in the Rock River, that where he lifeguarded was a little sort of swimming area in the Rock River.
It's fascinating.
Well, I think it is, because, you know, we're riding the Rock River Trail.
So we had made it through Dixon, through Sterling, we were headed towards Prophetstown. Everything was going great. We had the wind at our backs. We were about, 8 or 9 miles away from Prophetstown. And, then Dan.
You want to go ahead and explain what you've done?
I got a flat tire.
Yeah, and where are we?
I don't really know.
near Prophetstown?
Yeah, so we're in the middle of absolutely nowhere.
Yeah, that's what's going on.
Well, I'll tell you, Carl, this happens, and if you're prepared, as I am prepared, this kind
of I don't know what we're going to do. We are so close to Prophetstown. We have one more day on this journey. I don't know what's going to happen, but you better tune in tomorrow to find out.
Another fantastic cliffhanger there.
He's a master at it.
I never heard him scold anyone like I heard right there.
Yep.
It's like, look what you've done. Put your nose in this.
It was. Yeah. It really had a summer camp vibe. Like the next time, next time we saw each other, we were like, hey! It was like a reunion. It was only like 3 days later.
Oh, and when I was listening back to this morning, I was trying to figure out what that sound was. I didn't realize that's the sound of you pumping up the tire.
Yeah, that's the air pump. And I think it didn't work. I think I had to change out the tube. I fixed it, but it didn't work. Mm. And I don't think Carl included all that stuff. But we ended up that night in a bar called The Comeback Inn, which I thought it was a great line.
How fitting.
A great name for a bar. And he worked on that all night. And
we'll get back in.
Just drank and talked to people.
Nice.
All right, the last one. Day 5, the mighty Mississippi.
You see that, Carl?
Yep.
What is that?
It's the Rock River.
That is the Rock River. You've been hearing a lot about that lately.
Mm-hmm.
We're right here in Prophetstown in a campsite, and it's beautiful. It's very placid. It's very calm. It's flowing, I would say, reasonably quickly. And I was just standing here thinking, have we seen this water before? You know? I mean, is this the same water we saw in Theresa or in Watertown or Beloit or Oregon? Or is this new water? Did this come from a tributary? Mm.
Yes, has this water changed? Has this water changed us?
Hmm.
Have we changed this water?
Hmm.
Are we the same Dan and Carl that we were when we started?
These are all unknowables, but worthy of ponder. I want to say something else about Prophetstown, Carl, where we spent the night last night. And this is from NIU Professor Ed Calare's book, Place Names of Illinois.
As read by NIU Instructor of the Year, Dan Libman.
Oh, well. Prophetstown is in Whiteside. It's a city 14 miles southwest of Rock Falls, where I rode my bike through yesterday. Founded about 1838 on the site of the village of Wabokishiak, or Wapishika, White Cloud, better known as the Prophet, a Sauk Winnebago leader and advisor to Black Hawk. In one of the first acts of hostility of the Black Hawk War in May 1832, a company of Illinois volunteers under the command of Samuel Whiteside, for whom Whiteside County is named, destroyed his village because he had allegedly conspired with Black Hawk. And the post office was established in November 27th, 1835, as Prophet's Town, two words. No listing on when the Stumble Inn was established, which is the establishment Carl and I spent our evening last night.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful place. We thought it should more appropriately be named the Stumble Out, but we're not going to quibble. And let's head off on our momentous journey.
So we made our way down the road to Pink Pony, fantastic little breakfast place in Erie. Highly recommend it. Really good food, really reasonable prices. After we filled up there, we made our way on towards our final destination, which of course is where the Rock River meets the Mississippi. We knew we were going to meet Bareback, that's Dan's friend, somewhere along the line here, and eventually we did. It was exactly as Dan said. This guy rides his bike without a bike saddle, like 50 miles, no problem. So, of course, I had to ask him, hey, why do you ride without a saddle?
It's because I'm not a real good runner or a good biker. I'm kind of like in a limbo state. So, I don't qualify on either one of them. Some says that's not a real bike, and some says you're not a real runner, but it helps me train for longer runs. And that's not the sole reason for it. I've been doing it since 93.
Okay, before we keep going here, I'm so curious about this Bareback character. Dan, how did you meet this guy?
I met him on Ragbri. He's an Iowa legend. And he rides Ragbri, and he brings a giant floor pump, not a frame pump like I had, but a giant floor pump. And he helps people fix their flat tires. He's just sort of like a guardian angel on the ride. And his bike is, it's not just, it doesn't just not have a seat. It doesn't have a seat post. He has them specially made for him. There's, he can't just like occasionally, or like, you know, sit down.
It seemed dangerous, so I'm glad.
I think it is a little bit dangerous because it, if you're not used to it, but it's less dangerous than,
I mean, having the post.
Yeah, just that would be quite distracting.
Yeah.
That guy must have just calf muscles of steel.
He's really, he looks, he's built like a runner, you know, like sort of like just how they're sort of skeletons with muscles.
It is a kind of a combination of running and biking. Yeah. It's interesting. All right.
I used to take the seat off and on because I was always riding in high gear, and then I got a mountain bike. That was the pivotal point because I love riding a mountain bike so much that I felt like a kid, and I couldn't keep up with roadies on my mountain bike unless I stood. So that was the tipping point for me, was get on the mountain bike and stand and do the best I could. And so after a while, I took the seat off the mountain bike, ride 14 miles, and then I rode 40. In 75, I did my first century, I think it was in 93. And then I modified the bikes over time because they kept breaking because of the pressures involved. But I also found out that there's two other guys that I know. One's a Facebook friend that lives in Serbia that rides without a seat. And another guy wrote a book about, he rides a bike without a seat. I think it's even a single speed.
I love that he knows other people around the world who
do this.
You
have to go all the way to Serbia, though.
Wouldn't you?
There's one other guy in Serbia who does this, too. Amazing.
But he does stand up for cancer. He does events and stuff. So I don't think too much about it because I don't think too much at all.
What I really like about riding with Bareback is that he's an inspirational figure. It's not just the fact that he's riding without a seat. I assume he could sit down if he wanted to. It draws your attention. But the fact that he's always talking to people, and he brings people in and he opens people up. I've never seen somebody not be totally enthralled with Bareback in his presence. Whether you need help with a flat tire and he comes rolling up and you know that he's going to be able to fix it, or if you're just in a Casey's with him, you know that the cashier is going to light up as soon as he walks in, because they've already had 15 conversations over the course of the last 3 months, and they know each other's names, and that's everywhere you go with him.
Well, if you're on a club ride, and you've got 10 people or so, chances are somebody will maybe get a puncture or whatever, and it's just, there was somebody just on a recent weekend ride that I came by, and I said, well, you need... want to use a floor pump? And they said, and they had a hand pump, and they were pumping it off. And they go, no, we're good. We almost got it. And so I saw them 20 miles down the road, and they said, oh, yeah, we had a pinch flat because we didn't have enough air in the tire. I said, we should have used your pump in the first place.
So we spent a good amount of time with Bareback. He escorted us all the way out to the confluence of the Mississippi and the Rock River. And I have to admit, as we approached the finish line, I had some really conflicted feelings. As a producer, I had spent the entire last week here just focusing on trying to capture as much of this epic journey as possible, and I hadn't paid any attention to this very personal journey that I was going through myself. And as we got there, I started to realize how meaningful this journey would be to me in the years to come.
In a certain way, tracing a river from beginning to end is completely arbitrary. And a lot of times the road we were on couldn't even see the river for miles. But there's something about seeing that landscape and seeing the way that the river has changed the landscape and that the way the people interact with the river that was really inspiring. And that's what I felt the most inspired by. The people who showed up to ride with us for 10 or 15 miles, the people who met us at their towns as we pulled in and wanted to tell us where the good burgers were or where was a good place to sleep. And that's what I'm feeling the most grateful toward now that this is behind us.
So that's it. Thanks for joining Dan and I on this epic adventure, and we hope it inspires you to ride the Rock River Trail yourself. We think you'll enjoy it. I'm Carl Nelson.
That's a great ending. Yeah. And I love that you guys did inspire other people to do this. So you were the first ones, but I think about five or six other riders have done this trail since you and Carl finished it.
I've met a couple of people too, like when I'm riding bikes, who will say like, "Oh, I heard the thing on the radio." Actually, we met a guy when we were doing the museums piece. One of the guys said, "Oh, I heard it on the radio." He hadn't done it, but he remembered it. And I hope more people do it. It's still out there.
Well, listening back to this has been nice. It's also bittersweet too, because we miss Carl and our friend. But it's really great to actually to have this to listen back to and to hear his voice is really nice.
And hear him laughing.
Yeah. And so you got your 320-mile badge, Dan. Yes. Do you still have that?
I do.
Did you sew it somewhere special?
I sewed it onto a messenger bag. Yes. So, I still have that bag. I should have brought it, but I'll take a picture of it.
I love that.
And it's a very cool, and you know, as we talked, as Greg Farnham either will tell you or has already told you, you can do it in many different ways. You don't have to do it on a bike. You could do it on an airplane. I imagine it's a lot quicker.
That's cheating.
You could do it by car. You can do it. They have a chocolate trail where you just go down the thing and eat chocolates the whole way.
What? On foot, in a car, in a canoe?
I don't know. I
would eat
chocolate.
Big,
giant chocolate river. It's just Willy Wonka on the Rock River.
Thankfully, they've cleaned it up since those days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It is cool, though. If you go to rockrivertrail.com, you can see, like, people, there you guys are. Your names are there. And when you did it, you can see who did it by plane and all the other ways you could do it. I saw like an 89-year-old guy walked it. That was pretty cool. So people can get their names added, but you got to do it.
Yeah, and it is really true that like there's a lot of struggle or there's a lot of effort that puts into it. But when you get to the place where the Rock River and the Mississippi River meet, and when we did it, there was one of those
barge.
I was gonna say trawler. No, but there's one of those barges, and it was just an amazing moment. Yeah, you forget sometimes that it actually is gonna mean something to you, and it will.
Did you guys really hold hands as you drove?
Biked, pedaled
the last style. Few.
Well, we sort of debated who was gonna go first because I said, well, you should go first. Was your idea? If we thought whose name would be first. So he should go first and I would follow him. He refused. He said, we go side by side or not at all. So we did it, held hands and crossed the line.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's so beautiful.
It's hard to believe that this was 7 years ago, just about. Do you think you'd ever do this specific ride again, Dave?
Oh, I think I would. I absolutely would. Yeah. And the nice thing is that there is a lot of stuff that we didn't get to in the story that we did do. And there's a lot of stuff that we didn't do. So there's many activities. I would even say you could do it in 10 days. You could spread it out. You don't have to do it. We did it in 5 days because we wanted to get it done on the radio. But I think their maps even are for 7 days. Mm. So we had to combine them to do it in a week. But you could spread it out. You won't run out of things to do on the river.
I still can't believe that you guys were the first ones to bike it in this day and age.
I know.
So cool.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe, but it's we've sent a lot of historians back to like, look, did anybody else do it? Stuff like that. We spent a lot of money on it because we don't want to claim it if it's not true, but they found nothing, no evidence of it.
Wow.
A couple of people came close, but there were like incidents involving cannibalism. They were not able to complete. That happened.
Donner party.
Back in the day, yeah.
That's what happens when you do it in the winter.
Guys
too.
On penny farthings, giant front wheels. Not suited for the Hennepin Canal.
No.
But if anybody else does it, I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not official until you get your name on the Wall of Fame over there on Rock River Trail. Is it .com or .org?
.com.
RockRiverTrail.com. You can check out the Wall of Fame. Dan and Carl first on the list of people who biked the trail along with people who kayaked it. We mentioned the guy who walked the whole thing. And maybe you can have your name up there next. Well, you close out your last post, Dan, with a bunch of thank yous to everyone along the way. A special thanks to Carl for putting up with you for a week and producing radio in noisy bars while his partner whined about needing to go to sleep. And then I love the thank you to your wife, Molly, for marrying you and then driving to both ends of the trail. And then you write that she did the Rock River Trail twice that week, but no one interviewed her or gave her a badge. Therefore, I give you my 320 badge as a show of love and appreciation. Can you please sew it on my messenger bag for me?
Classy.
LOL.
Nothing but class.
She wouldn't want it. Yeah.
Well, this was fun to listen back to this. I remember when you guys did this, I had only just started at the station.
Yeah,
I was pretty new, and I remember thinking, like, wow, this is so cool that they're going out and doing this and documenting this whole thing for radio.
I remember a young Spencer Tritt carrying the,
still had some
the equipment.
Glimmer in my eyes.
Some hope.
Well, we'll have to figure out ways to relive this glory at some point. We've relived it now, and I'm glad that we can introduce this. I mean, this was sitting, it's sitting in the WNIJ archives, but I'm really glad that we're able to bring it back out.
Me too.
Reintroduce it to a whole new bunch of listeners of Under Rocks.
And I think it's fine. It's where, I mean, I mean, Carl did a lot of great stuff. I mean, he started the Studio A show and everything like that. But if you really knew how little he had to work with that I gave him to work with on this, the fact that he made so much entertaining radio is just a real tribute to his talent and his skills.
And as someone who likes to take days, if not weeks, to edit a piece, this was overnight, every night after riding.
Let us know what we should explore next on Under Rocks.
You got a long stretch of trail you want us to ride? We can maybe do it.
Is there a river that hasn't been biked ever?
There must be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Get in touch with us by...
Send us an email, rocks@niu.edu. Set us off on our next adventure. You can come too.